But if you close your eyes.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. You're listening to This Week Again. I'm your host, Suzanne Posel. We're going to start off this show with why the DOJ says bribery is okay now. Move on to the many, many, many L's our dear leader has had this last 7 days. And follow all of that up with an update to our ongoing docuseries. Guess which tech bros are in the Epstein files? Let's begin, shall we? Some weeks are more anticlimactic than others, but this week did not disappoint. For starters, did you know none of what happened this week was supposed to happen? I know it sounds crazy, but it most definitely is. According to a lot of Christians on social media, September 23rd was supposed to be our last day on Earth.
It's being called rapture talk, a convinced contingent of TikTok users who claim the rapture is happening today. It all started with a South African preacher who posted this podcast in June.
God took me to see the future, and then he brought me back.
He claims Jesus appeared to him in a vision, telling him he would return to Earth on September 23rd and 24th, dates coinciding with the Jewish holiday Rosh Hashanah.
Millions of Christians all around the world, including South Africa, will disappear in a split second.
The end is near. At least that's what one corner of TikTok is claiming.
My fellow Christians out there, I want this video to help one another.
Are we not scared?
Our salvation is in Christ alone.
I'm catching a flight to heaven in September anyway. Oh, I need the car.
Since this is the rapture eve, there's no, like, calories aren't gonna matter anymore.
Me and Max are ready for the rapture.
I've already sold all of my human belongings. I've said goodbye to my loved ones.
Why is everyone talking about this?
I don't know. Can I throw out a theory, though, Hallie, which is that maybe the rapture did actually happen and we got left behind?
I'll bet those rapture-loving Christians never thought they would be the ones left behind. But here they are. Which is hilarious, by the way, because the rapture isn't even in that Bronze Age book none of them read. Probably because they can't. Seriously, their Bible is thousands of years old, but the idea of the rapture was made up by some chick named Margaret MacDonald way back in the not-so-long-ago time of 1830. And for those of you in the back, that is 1,779 years between the writing of the New Testament and this rapture bullshit. So there's no fucking way that being whisked up into the sky to meet your daddy was ever biblical canon.
Anyway, apparently I have to get back to work. This is bullshit.
And besides, if Jesus did come back, I'd bet my seat on the rapture train, he would have been snatched up by puppy killer gnome's frozen Gestapo, which might explain why that South African dude who started this whole thing came out and said that he had gotten the dates wrong. And for now, the rapture is postponed. Take the last 7 days. Those ICSS soldiers lost their shit during multiple raids, killed a man while they were attempting to kidnap him, and pointed a gun they dropped at bystanders filming their fuck-ups. Although, the Guns magazine had fallen out of the gun before the freeze-dried moron pointed it at the crowd, of course, there could have been at least one bullet left in the chamber.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
Heck, even the douche who recently expressed his anti-ICE sentiments by shooting at and killing two detainees while injuring another before turning the gun on himself. Notice I didn't say DHS agents. And that's because the 29-year-old white guy who did the shooting apparently wasn't aiming for any of the agents of ICE when he shot at the back of a van transporting the recently kidnapped. Oh, and Gonzo Patel's pathetic excuse for Sharpie-inscribed bullets that literally say anti-ICE on them allegedly found at the scene.
This is some bullshit.
I mean, come on. You could have at least written fuck ICE. That would have been at least believable. And if we're being totally honest, it's not a shocker at all that another young white man with access to a gun, got all up in his feels and decided to deal with it by pew-pewing several people. It's kind of becoming a cliche at this point. So I guess we'll just have to settle for some good old-fashioned corruption from the tippy top.
The Trump Justice Department shut down an investigation into White House border czar Tom Homan. Last year, in an undercover operation, the FBI recorded Homan accepting $50,000 in cash after indicating he could help agents who were posing as business executives win government contracts in the second Trump administration. At the time, Homan was the owner of a private consulting business and was not a public official.
The FBI was actually involved in a different investigation in Texas when one of the subjects there was apparently overheard talking about Tom Homan taking money in return for a promise to give people contracts when the new administration began. And they sent in FBI agents, as I understand it, undercover with $50,000 wrapped up in a restaurant bag. And he accepted the $50,000 apparently in return for a promise to steer them contracts when he got in.
FBI agents hid cameras and posed as businessmen and recorded Homan accepting $50,000 in cash from them. The FBI and Justice Department sat on that recording and waited to see if he would try to hold up his end of the bargain once in office. But after Trump became president, his Justice Department shut the investigation down, claiming that despite the recording, they, quote, found no credible evidence of any criminal wrongdoing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Look, I did nothing criminal. I did nothing illegal. And it's hit piece after hit piece after hit piece. And I'm glad the FBI and DOJ came out and said, and, you know, said that nothing illegal happened and nothing, you know, no criminal activity.
Mr. Homan never took the $50,000 that you're referring to, so you should get your facts straight, number one. Number two, this was another example of the weaponization of the Biden Department of Justice against one of President Trump's strongest and most vocal supporters.
Well, clutch my pearls and call me KK Caroline, because this bitch came out swinging like she'd just spent the previous 3 hours trying to wipe off that ring of Cheeto dust around her mouth. Maybe that would explain why she's been drawing new lips with her lipstick like we can't tell the difference. Because for fact's sake, there is a fucking video of Tom Barely Human taking $5,000 from an undercover FBI agent in exchange for contracts with the Trump regime. Not that any of us will ever see that video, when you consider Cash the Knight now stands over watch at the FBI, never blinking once thanks to his daily dose of Florida snow.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Or how about an indictment for bribery from the ambulance chaser running the DOJ? Because, break and fuck the news, apparently that's not illegal anymore. And since that really pisses me off, let's move on to some good news. After a few days of reveling in revenge over Jimmy Kimmel, while Disney got their stocks handed to them after losing nearly $4 billion within a span of 4 days, Assolini was not very happy to hear that Jimmy would be returning to ABC without making a donation to Turning Point USA and without issuing an apology hostage video style for all the world to see. And in the spirit of rubbing it in, here are some highlights from Jimmy's return.
Anyway, as I was saying before I was interrupted, I'm not sure who had a weirder 48 hours, me or the CEO of Tylenol. You understand that it was never my intention to make light of the murder of a young man. This show is not important. What is important is that we get to live in a country that allows us to have a show like this. He tried, did his best to cancel me. Instead, he forced millions of people to watch the show. That backfired bigly. He might have to release the Epstein files to distract us from this now. Conditions for my return to the air, and there is one. Disney has asked me to read the following statement. And I've agreed to do it. Here we go. To reactivate your Disney Plus and Hulu account, President of the United States made it very clear he wants to see me and the hundreds of people who work here fired from our jobs. Our leader celebrates Americans losing their livelihoods because he can't take a joke. And now he's openly rooting for NBC to fire Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers and the hundreds of Americans who work for their shows who don't make millions of dollars. And I hope that if that happens, or if there's even any hint of that happening, you will be 10 times as loud as you were this week. Should the government be allowed to regulate which podcasts the cell phone companies and Wi-Fi providers are allowed to let you download to make sure they serve the public interest? He's gunning for our journalists, too. He's suing them. He's bullying them. Over the weekend, his foxy friend Pete Hegseth announced a new policy that requires journalists with Pentagon press credentials to sign a pledge promising not to report information that hasn't been explicitly authorized for release. That includes unclassified information. They want to pick and choose what the news is. I know that's not as interesting as muzzling a comedian, but it's so important to have a free press, and it is nuts that we aren't paying more attention. Look, I never imagined I would be in a situation like this. I barely paid attention in school. But one thing I did learn from Lenny Bruce and George Carlin and Howard Stern is that a government threat to silence a comedian the president doesn't like is anti-American.
Why, yes, it is, my good sir. And a testament, I would say, to how far this country's gone off the rails now that a comedian getting fired is the only reason we stand up for our constitutional rights. Disney saw the biggest financial loss since they put out that crap they call Snow White, with not only $4 billion disappearing from the mouse's wallet, but hundreds of thousands of Disney Plus subscribers canceled their subscriptions, vacation plans, and cruise ship bookings in solidarity with Jimmy, cutting into Disney's future earnings. So with all of that at stake, ABC got the mouse's permission to bring Kimmel back, which left local broadcasting assholes like Sinclair and Nexstar as the only thing standing in the way of Jimmy and his audience.
Jimmy Kimmel is set to return to late-night television after a nearly week-long suspension, but you won't see him everywhere in New England. Two groups of ABC station owners, Sinclair and Nexstar, will not carry his return tonight. So that means people in Hartford, Connecticut, Burlington, Vermont will see something else at 11:35.
We were in the middle, and in a lot of ways still are in the middle, of an unprecedented fix. After almost 23 years on the air, we're suddenly not being broadcast in 20% of the country. Welcome back to Jimmy Kimmel Live. We are still on the air in most of the country, except ironically for Washington, D.C., where we have been preempted. We are off the air in Nashville, New Orleans, Portland, Oregon, Salt Lake City, and St. Louis.
Sinclair is saying that they're going to put alternative programming because, in essence, they do not like what Kimmel said. They do want an apology from him, is what I understand, and a large amount of money into the Charlie Kirk Memorial Fund.
Heard from Nextdoor, with them saying we made a decision last week to preempt Jimmy Kimmel Live following what ABC referred to as Mr. Kimmel's ill-timed and insensitive comments at a critical time in our national discourse. And adding, we stand by that decision pending assurance that all parties are committed to fostering an environment of respectful, constructive dialogue.
Wow, that is a lot to stand on. Maggot morons running Sinclair and Nexstar were really pushing back against ABC. Because Jimmy didn't apologize, he didn't donate to Charlie Kirk's grift of an organization designed to target 15 to 25-year-old Americans with right-wing propaganda refusing to air the show on their networks. And that worked for maybe like a few days until Sinclair and Nexstar started getting calls from their advertisers saying potential customers were refusing to buy their shit since they advertised on their networks. Because everyone knows the fastest way to silence a billionaire or a billion-dollar corporation is to cut off their cash flow.
Oh, that's terrible.
You seem kind of psyched.
No, I'm bummed.
A memo Disney apparently didn't get, because since bringing Jimmy Kimmel back on air, they've also decided to raise their Disney Plus rates by as much as $9 more a month for ad-free streaming. Not the best way to get your former subscribers to come back home, or for that matter, retain the ones who stayed, but hey, what do I know? I'm not a broke-ass billionaire who tries to pass off a dead raccoon swirled on my head as hair while wearing dollar store foundation on my very old hands, trying to convince the rest of the world that I'm in tippy-top shape when all it takes is an escalator not working to take me out.
This is what it is like to live in a country run by an insecure authoritarian bully. Okay, so Trump passed through the security barricades. He then walked up to the escalator and stepped onto it with the First Lady, at which point the escalator abruptly stopped, leaving Trump flummoxed for a few seconds. First Lady just walking up the stairs as one normal person does. He ultimately decided to just walk up the immobile staircase himself. But for Donald Trump, the brief inconvenience of having to walk up a non-working escalator while on camera was enough to provoke outrage on the world stage.
All I got from the United Nations was an escalator that on the way up stopped right in the middle. If the First Lady wasn't in great shape, she would have fallen. But she's in great shape. We're both in good shape. We both stood. And then a teleprompter that didn't work. Thank you very much.
MAGA, especially Caroline Leavitt, the White House press secretary, well, they're demanding answers after an escalator was stopped. And when Donald Trump was getting on it with Melania Trump, Caroline Leavitt just put out a tweet saying, if someone at the United Nations intentionally stopped the escalator as the president and first lady were stepping on, they need to be fired and investigated immediately. She then quoted a Times piece which suggested that UN staff members have joked that they may turn off the escalators and elevators simply and telling them that they ran out of money so that he would have to walk up the stairs, he referring to Donald Trump.
I mean, this is an insurrection. And what we need to do is either leave the UN or we need to bomb it.
Mm.
It is in New York, though, right?
Yeah, it
could
is.
Be some fallout there. Yeah, yeah. All right. Maybe gas it?
No.
That's not too
don't
oh my
gas
goodness.
It. Okay. He's but kidding. We need to He's destroy kidding. It. Maybe just can we demolish the
we could,
building?
We could turn it into...
Have everybody leave and then we'll demolish the building?
We could turn it into affordable housing.
Okay.
That's what you do, thank affordable housing.
No, I don't like that. I like nice sky-rises, Dana, the expensive condominiums.
I'm
you
trying
see
to win an
the
election
East
here.
River from there. No, this is absolutely unacceptable, and I hope they get to the bottom of it, and I hope they really injure emotionally the people that did it.
Tonight, the Associated Press reports that the UN understands that someone from the president's party who ran ahead of him inadvertently triggered the stop mechanism on the escalator.
That's right, dearies. Cankles McDonald decided his entrance into the United Nations would be captured on camera for all of his social media followers to see. So he sent his cameraman up the fully functioning escalator, who then proceeded to trip the emergency stop mechanism at the top of the moving stairs, just as Melania and Dolt 47 were stepping on. And as far as the teleprompter not working, well, those were supplied by the White House. So that means...
Listen to me. We've traced the call. It's coming from inside the house. Our squad car's going over there.
Meanwhile, the distractions keep coming after Eric's dad had a senior moment on social media, posting his demands on his Twitter knockoff site, thinking he was having a private convo with his D-average lawyer running the DOJ.
We have to act fast. If they're not guilty, that's fine. If they are guilty or if they should be charged, they should be charged. And we have to do it now.
In a social media post this weekend, he urged Attorney General Pam Bondi to serve justice against three of the president's high-profile critics. Former FBI Director James Comey, New York Attorney General Letitia James, and California Senator Adam Schiff. All three have denied misconduct, including allegations James and Schiff engaged in mortgage fraud.
The president said the quiet part out loud. He directed DOJ to pursue his enemies, and that's antithetical to the rule of law.
Well, you're fucking right it is. Right now, Pygmy Bondi has indicted former FBI Director James Comey, who served under President Obama and Fat Nixon, who eventually fired him in 2017. And all this is ketchup-covered revenge, with the indictment coming 4 days before the statute of limitations runs out. And the reason it was never pursued before is because there isn't sufficient evidence to convict. See, Gerth Vader has been upset at Comey for 8 years over that one time the Russian asset and registered agent for Turkey, Mike Flynn, was Invasion Dawn's national security advisor back in 2017 and was going to be forced to testify before Congress about his shadiness. So now that he's squatting back in the White House, the era of revenge has begun. Because what else was going to change the media cycle after nearly a week of making fun of the Lard Father for old mansplaining his brainworm-inspired ideas about what causes autism, and for good reason?
First, effective immediately, the FDA will be notifying physicians that the use of acetaminophen, is that okay? Yes. Which is basically commonly known as Tylenol during pregnancy, can be associated with a very increased risk of autism. So taking Tylenol is not good. All right, I'll say it. It's not good. For this reason, they are strongly recommending that women limit Tylenol use during pregnancy unless medically necessary. Nothing bad can happen. It can only good happen. But with Tylenol, don't take it. Don't take it. First question, what can you take instead? It's actually, there's not an alternative to that.
And in case you were wondering, that's some old bullshit. First off, Gummer Dawn having problems saying the word acetaminophen while giving medical advice is hilariously terrifying. Considering how many people ended up dying from ivermectin during COVID, thanks to mine incompetence last rendition of The Good Doctor. Now we're going to have to worry about maggot pregnant women succumbing to 105 fever thanks to this shit, contributing to an already rising mother and infant mortality rates here in the United States, thanks to all that abortion banning in red states. But I digress. I'll let the science speak for how medically negligent this kind of advice really is.
The maker of Tylenol, Kenvue, in a statement to CBS News, said independent sound science clearly shows that taking acetaminophen does not cause autism.
The World Health Organization definitely adding its clout to this debate, saying there currently is no conclusive scientific evidence confirming a possible link between autism and the use of paracetamol, which is Tylenol, during pregnancy. Top researchers in Sweden are pushing back. The results from a decades-long and nationwide study trying to find a link came out just last year.
In total, the study tracked 2.5 million pregnancies, following each child through time from 1995 to 2019, meaning data stretches back about 25 years. The study found autism rates were 0.09% higher compared to pregnant mothers who did not take acetaminophen.
It's absurd, and it might reflect the administration's view on female health and female rights. Just pushing through pain and pushing through disease is not what we usually recommend in evidence-based medicine. My primary concern is that we're once again putting the blame on mothers for no apparent reason and with no evidence to back that up. It sounds a lot like it did in the 1960s when there was talk about refrigerator moms and it was their fault that the children were sick.
The Trump administration cited a Mount Sinai and Harvard analysis of nearly 50 past studies to back their claim. That review supported evidence of an association, but not causation.
Pretty much in consensus that paracetamol is one of the safest medications to use in pregnancy for treatments of pains and fevers, and it is the recommended option. The alternatives to acetaminophen in the U.S. might be other medications with less safe profiles, such as opiates or other things to manage pain. We do know that these have serious consequences when used in pregnancy, both for the mom and for the baby.
Ultimately, what is the connection between acetaminophen and autism?
There is no such connection.
And in another timeline where Biff did not get the almanac, this would be the end of the story. But because the Republicans have spent the last 40 years defunding public education, among other things, this isn't the end. Because not enough people know that the word autism was first used in 1911 by a Swiss psychiatrist who described social withdrawal in his patients. The next recorded use of the word autism was in 1925 by a Russian psychiatrist describing traits that we associate with modern interpretations of the autism spectrum. And again, in 1943, autism was used by Leo Kanner, who described infants displaying extreme aloneness while insisting on sameness, issues that we see today in people who have autism. Same in 1944, with an Austrian pediatrician going a step further by pointing out that autistic children have above average intelligence that their social difficulties just don't allow them to express. But please, tell me again how a painkiller called Tylenol that wasn't even around until 1955 has anything to do with what causes autism.
Lies, lies, and more lies, and lies on top of lies.
And if you think this bullshit about autism stops here, think again. Because it's not just about Tylenol. Apparently it's the vaccines too.
You didn't see that coming?
Unfortunately, yes, my dearies. Because all brainworm ideas lead to vaccines. And this time, the Central Park snacker and the overbronzed gourd came with receipts, albeit they were from another store and several decades old.
And by the way, I think I can say that there are certain groups of people that don't take vaccines and don't take any pills that have no autism. Does that tell you something? That's currently. Is that a correct statement, by the way?
There are some studies that suggest that, yeah, with the Amish, for example.
The Amish, yeah, virtually. I heard none. See, Bobby wants to be very careful with what he says, and he should, but I'm not so careful with what I say. But you have certain groups. The Amish, as an example, they have essentially no autism.
That's a fucking lie. And by the way, how dare you drag these modern conveniences shunning people into your desire to kick Tylenol to the curb when they too take it for pain medication? Bet you didn't know that, because neither did I until I looked it up. They apparently take a lot of over-the-counter medications for a variety of reasons, none of which is to give unborn fetuses autism, because that's not how autism works. It's a genetically passed propensity that is triggered by a whole host of factors, including but not limited to the family genome, how well the fetus's neurons talk to each other, prenatal exposure to pesticides, changes in the genes, prematurity, or low weight at birth. I could go on and on and on, but the fact is, Tylenol and vaccines have nothing to do with autism. And perhaps the Amish can be the ones to prove this.
This week, President Trump claimed that the Amish have essentially no autism. But experts say that's not true. Braxton Mitchell, a genetic epidemiologist, has worked with the Amish for 30 years as co-director of the Amish Research Clinic in Lancaster, PA. He says that he knows firsthand that autism does exist in the Amish community. Mitchell cited a 2010 systematic assessment of autism conducted in the Amish community, which is the most current data available. That assessment screened nearly 1,900 Amish children and found that about 1 in 271 had autism. While that was lower than the U.S. estimate at the time, experts warn that cultural differences in answering screening questions could explain the gap. Experts say it may be underdiagnosed in part because of cultural factors.
Yeah, duh. The Amish aren't running to the cities to tell everyone about how many of them are autistic because they're mostly into home remedies and folk medicine, combined with the fact that they prefer to refer to autism as, quote, the child's way, and believe everyone has a vital role to play in their society. Unlike this anti-Tylenol make the pregnant person suffer, and don't forget vaccines are bad crap. Only a former heroin junkie would call sound medical advice, by the way. In other words,
I'm a liar. I love to lie. I don't know why. I wish I could stop. I can't. I think I'm sick. It's a disease. I don't even tell good lies. I tell a bunch of dumbass lies on a regular basis.
And while that's how fucked up is fucked up, there was something more disturbing than a 79-year-old man who couldn't say acetaminophen to come out of this distraction. It was this comment made by the Floridian fondler about hepatitis B and the vaccine.
Hepatitis B, again, that's sexually transmitted. And we think you should wait. I think you should wait till 12. But I recommend the hepatitis B. Take it at 12. Sexually transmitted. You don't have to give it to the baby when the baby's 2 years old. When they're 12, it's not, doesn't seem to be a problem at all.
Now, on the surface, that probably just seems like the same ignorant babble we've come to expect from Payless Putin. But if you noticed, he's talking about sexually transmitted diseases not being a problem until the child is of the age of 12 years old. Like, that's a normal age to start having sex. And just for shits and giggles, the reason infants are given the Hep B shot is because if the mother is infected, then she can pass it to the baby during the birthing process. Without it, the baby could develop liver disease or cancer and suffer from liver failure later in life. But never mind all of that, because apparently Ronald Grump doesn't see a child as a viable sex partner until the age of 12. Liver problems be damned. And that's not only a disgusting perspective coming from a dude that was best friends with Jeffrey Epstein for like 10 years until Jeff started trafficking pervert Hoover's favorite spa employees. His words, not mine.
What? What the fuck?
But wait, there's more. Because the Dems on the Oversight Committee decided to drop another Epstein load as a refresher, considering the corporate media had moved on to other things. And this time, the Dems brought receipts. So, for exposition purposes, back in the long-ago time of last June, Phony Stark and Rumpelthinskin were having a public breakup that involved a salacious accusation made by the Space Karen himself that SideQuest Donnie was in the Epstein files. And that's the reason they haven't been released. Oh, those were good times. But fast forward to this past week, and I've got to say, this Epstein drip, it just keeps getting better and better.
The Epstein files. Democrats on the House Oversight Committee released more details, more names today, saying Elon Musk, that's a new one, Steve Bannon, Peter Thiel, Prince Andrew, all appear in them.
Epstein was scheduled to have lunch with Peter Thiel and Steve Bannon in 2017 and 2019, respectively. The email also mentions a tentative breakfast with Bill Gates.
Elon Musk's name has appeared in files relating to Jeffrey Epstein with reference to him potentially visiting the island that Epstein owned. The files released by Democrats in Washington show Prince Andrew was also listed as a passenger on the pedophile's private plane.
Elon Musk may have been a visitor to Epstein Island on December 6, 2014. An entry in what appears to be Epstein's daily schedule reads, "Reminder, Elon Musk to Island, December 6. Is this still happening?" December 6, 2014, of course, is 6 years after Jeffrey Epstein was listed as a sex offender.
Holy forking shirtballs. I think that we've reached the point in the plot where the accuser is revealed to be a deflector. Because guess who probably visited Jeff's Island anytime after 2015? I gotta say, finding out that Boy Cavalier may have enjoyed vacationing at the most pedo-friendly destination in the entire world definitely tracks. Not to mention the other assholes trying to get in Jeff's good graces, like Steve Bannon, former Trump campaign manager, who became White House chief of staff, by the way, for at least 7 months in the first iteration. And then Peter Thiel, totally gay dude, who's just so happened to bankroll just a Dick Vance into political existence, and whose tech company is exclusively helping the IC Gestapo kidnap innocent people straight from their jobs. And let's not forget about Bill Gates, the rich bitch who stole an idea from his roommate in order to become the OG tech billionaire who's now a single man in part of his involvement with Epstein, according to his former wife, Melinda Gates. All the more reason for Congress to just release the Epstein files. Barbie sat there on her desk, now she says they don't exist. Donald wants us to forget, just look the other way. Something shady going on, even Megan knows it's wrong. Epstein didn't kill himself, we know the truth, just let it out. We want to see the files. Yeah, you said you had them, but you won't release them. We want to see the files. Yeah, we're being suspicious, cause we know you're in them. Sounds like a good idea to me. And 84% of Americans who also want to see the files. Unfortunately, there is a micro penis speaking for the House on Capitol Hill who is doing everything a man of his tiny stature can do to stop that from happening.
Speaker of the House, MAGA Mike Johnson, is refusing to swear in Adelita Grijalva. She just won her race in Arizona. She's now a congresswoman-elect. But MAGA Mike is refusing to swear her in, and it appears that it may be because she would be the 218th vote on the discharge petition that would force a vote on the Epstein files. MAGA Mike is saying that he has to wait for the final official result, something that he's never stood by when any Republican has won. When any Republican wins their races, he swears them in the day after. And it's not like this was a close race. Adelita won her race by 40 points. And the Secretary of State of Arizona has already sent over the paperwork to the House of Representatives that's required for her to be sworn in.
So the latest is I was looking at the example of now Representative Waukesha from Virginia, who was elected 2 weeks ago Tuesday, and that following Wednesday, less than 24 hours, was sworn in and with unofficial results, and it was approved without objection. So for me, this Chicana from Tucson, apparently the rules have now changed in 2 weeks, and we're being asked for official results. I'm sort of wondering why in 2 weeks the rules are so different, and maybe it has something to do with the fact that I'm number 218.
Oh, you best believe it, sweetie. It's absolutely because you would be the 218th vote to release the Epstein files. Small Johnson knows that, and so does everyone else. Why do you think the tiny-handed perv in the White House is now threatening all Republicans with primaries if they vote on the discharge petition to force the DOJ to release what's in the Epstein files? And that's all I have to say about that. New episodes of This Week Again air every Sunday. You can follow me, Suzanne Posel, or the show, This Week Again, on social media platforms like Blue Sky, Threads, Insta, Facebook. You can listen to us on places like Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, Amazon, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you so much for listening to this show. To dear for now.
Messages. We'll be right back. These are difficult times, and if you believe in justice, progress, and democracy, the news you read and listen to can be pretty depressing. And that's why there's a new podcast called Good News for Lefties and America. Every day it features positive news stories for progressive listeners, because no matter how disturbing the headlines might be, there's always hope we can build on for a better tomorrow. Good News for Lefties and America. Listen on this platform at goodnewsforlefties.com or wherever podcasts are heard.